Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Lebnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Zion B'Kislev, Parashas V'Yetze, Tavshin Ayin Zion, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 6 December 2016, webcasting from the Obstacle to Peace in the Mind of John Kerry, successor to the first Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson. How the mighty have fallen. What a distance the U.S. has come since 1790, when Mr. Jefferson became the first Secretary of State. With a staff, the entire personnel of the State Department being five clerks besides himself. Jefferson is venerated by contemporary liberals as the patron saint of American liberalism. They even call themselves, some of them, Jeffersonian Democrats. Well, maybe they are in some ways, but not in others. Starting with his perception of Islam. No multiculti. He thought Western civilization, certainly America in his day and age, was superior to Islam. Was he an Islamophobe, a bigot who for no reason whatsoever disliked and disrespected Islam? No, his view was based on his encounter with this culture, which really was foremost in his professional life for two decades. He spent 5 years in Paris representing the United States, and for the entire time, minus a couple of months, he had to deal with American hostages in Islam, who were not just hostages, but slaves. He returned from France in 1790, and in his first major report to Congress, he spoke of the continuing hostage crisis in Algiers, and he called for the building of a navy. The United States didn't have one. When in Paris, he had negotiated face-to-face with an ambassador from Libya demanding tribute, about a sixth of the United States' gross national product, or American merchant ships would be captured and the people aboard enslaved. Jefferson bought a Quran to understand the culture, and when he left office as Secretary of State in 1793, his last major report to Congress was again on a sudden hijacking of 11 merchant ships, which impacted the U.S. economy like 9/11. The New York Stock Exchange crashed, all transatlantic shipping shut down, American ports shut down, people were thrown out of work. In the wake of this mass attack in the fall of 1793, over 100 Americans were taken hostage and enslaved, and Congress finally, the following March of 94, decided to fund a navy, build warships as Secretary of State Jefferson wanted, and asked for again in his last report to Congress. So when he became President Jefferson in 1801, one of his first official acts was sending a squadron of four warships to the Mediterranean because the Mahometans were making threats again. And what ensued was 4 years of war, commemorated in American history via the Marine Corps hymn, From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli. This produced a squadron of U.S. naval heroes these 4 years to inspire generations of American boys in the years, the decades, the generations to come. Well, that was then, and today is today. In an America where the penultimate Secretary of State was this woman, this wholly incompetent and crooked woman, and the current Secretary of State, John Kerry, well, he has a very different take on Islam than his professional forebear, Thomas Jefferson. At the annual coffee klatch on Sunday in Washington, funded by Chaim Saban at the Brookings Institute, Secretary of State John Kerry said the following, in response to recent suggestions by Prime Minister Netanyahu that Israel look to make alliances with the Arab states in the region, also threatened by Iran, as Israel is. The J-Post reports that Kerry, quote, warned Netanyahu against teasing Israelis by saying that there can be a peace agreement with the Arab world that would precede a two-state solution. Direct quote. There will be no separate peace between Israel and the Arab world. I want to make that clear to all of you. Without the Palestinian process and without Palestinian peace, close quote. I read that and really could only agree with what he said. In fact, this is basically the subtitle of my book, Inventing the Palestinians as the Obstacle to Peace, in which I describe how Palestinian nationalism has been very much at war with UN Resolution Security Council Resolution 242 of November of 1967, because it calls for peace talks between the belligerents of the previous June, the Six-Day War, with no mention of any Palestinians. It's my view that the Palestinians were invented at this time to hide behind for the Arab aggressor states to claim that only when the Palestinians receive justice would they make peace too, when there were no Palestinians. And here we have it, from the horse's mouth, the latest version of a Secretary of State a long way from Thomas Jefferson, who basically was using his mouth on Sunday to spread the Arab narrative. If John Kerry were a secret PLO operative being paid much money to aggress against the Jews, he could not have done a better job. His statement is a perfect reproduction of the so-called Arab narrative, meaning the Arab version of truth, which is never true. For Arabs, truth is not objective, it's subjective. They experience the rebirth of Israel in 1948 and its numerous victories since then in battle over Arabs as a humiliation. And it's not right to humiliate people. The Jews are guilty of doing that. And never mind the Arabs started the fighting. They started the fighting every time. The truth is how bad they feel, and blame Israel for making them feel bad. So yours truly was quite pleased to read this story yesterday of Kerry's swan song at this annual Gabfest, in which he performed perfectly, the perfect dummy on a ventriloquist's lap, speaking the central Arab lie and perversion of the truth, that peace means appeasing the Palestinians first, the injured party in the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's not the Jews repeatedly killed in wars and terror atrocities, it's the Palestinians who are the prime victims in this conflict, and only Israel can bring peace by submitting to their demands. John Kerry, the current Secretary of State, was serving as the mouthpiece for the same Arabs who have been killing us in every year for over a century of resurrecting our ancient homeland, bring it back to life from the wasteland and desolation that the Muslims kept it in. The very existence of Israel is what enrages Muslims, and that preceded the Six-Day War by 2 decades and the communities built since then on that territory. And also, let's not forget the 3 decades before statehood and under British mandatory rule, when Jews were also murdered in terror attacks by Haj Amin's assassins. But Kerry sees the settlements as the obstacle to peace. Yeah, I know, my subtitle has it right. Inventing the Palestinians is the obstacle to peace. The good news, though, via the good work of Caroline Glick and J-Post today, are two Donald Trump appointees in major defense positions that could not be more in the spirit opposed to Obama and Kerry when it comes to the Middle East. Glick reminded us that both Michael Flynn, his national security advisor, and new defense secretary James Mattis were sacked by Obama for pretty much the same reason and their different theories of engagement. They disagreed with his policy vis-a-vis the Muslim barbarians in Afghanistan in one place and Iraq in the other, how to deal with them. Someday soon, one hopes Americans will be able to be honest with themselves and see in Obama the truth. This is a de facto enemy agent. He was forever defending Islam in words and on the ground, did not want to fight them at all. But now both of these men, fired by Obama for their criticism of his relationship to Muslim terrorists, will be implementing their ideas in the new administration. Both agree that public enemy number one in the Middle East for the U.S. is Iran. Flynn opposed the invasion of Iraq after 9/11, not because he opposed invading, but because it was the wrong country. It was Iran that needed to be invaded, I thought, and said the same at the time. Of course, how wonderful for Israel that it resulted in the destruction of a huge army with like 100 divisions, the Iraqi establishment. But in the war against terror, Iraq was not home base. Iran is. Saddam Hussein was a monster, but no Muslim jihadi versus these religious fanatics in Tehran whose culture allows them to send boys into minefields to make a path for fighters by stepping on the mines and getting blown up or just losing a leg. The Iranians have also been known in history to be one of the most creative people in devising satanic tortures for their political prisoners. So this is extraordinarily refreshing news. To have both these opponents of Obama, fired by him, suddenly coming into power, portends perhaps better days ahead.
Yom Asher Barah כונן והקים במלכות שבת שוכן שחכימה אם רגלי לא תשקוט ללא מרגוע בחיקה אנפש את ענה שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום לשם לבנה עוד ותפרה נחלת עבדי אשר יחידה דוד יקרה התחיל וחילה וליבי טוב ושמח שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום לשם יום שבת תשמח מאוד נפשי לעלות להר קודשי מאתמול תחזיק בקו שישי שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם יונתי תבונני שירה לצורי מחיבה את ההר זה זכר אצל החופשי עולם הבא שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום היום לשם שבת היום
Well, the top story this morning in Israel is, of course, the 60 votes in the Knesset for the first reading of a bill that the Likud and the Jewish Home people are praising for the future legalizing of some 4,000 Jewish homes of dubious legality, even by our own laws. The price, though, is kowtowing to the enlightened judges in the High Court who want to see 40 Jewish homes destroyed. It will make them feel good. As I understand it, objections from Moshe Kalon and his faction, Kulanu, and others were concerned for honoring High Court decisions no matter what, and they were pacified by agreeing to the scheduled ritual of driving tearful Jews from their homes. The new law, though, would annex the ground under all Jewish residents at the moment. That's the price. The Attorney General Mandelblit, though, is still shaking his head at the text that did get voted on and passed the first reading. Removed was the clause calling for saving Amona somehow. But still, says Mandelblit, the new law is indefensible in international law and I think even Israeli law, in his opinion. And all I can say is that the root cause of this political headache is the Israeli refusal to stake its rights to this real estate. The Israeli posture for almost half a century now, shared by the secular ruling elite left and right, holds that Judea and Samaria are bait, a bargaining chip, to hold out, to entice the Arabs into making peace. Trouble is, part of this Israeli behavior contains the unspoken fantasy that ultimately the Arabs will not only agree to make peace, they won't demand all of Judea and Samaria, and they won't demand back the Jerusalem they used to control. They will agree that Greater Jerusalem expanded over land formerly in Jordanian hands, the southern community of Gilo and northern community in French Hill will remain in Jewish hands. They'll agree to that. And of course they'll agree that Gush Etzion, the block of settlements, will remain Israeli territory in Male Adumim, Ariel, and the Jordan River Valley. Arabs will agree to all this. This is the Israeli fantasy that has lasted as long as it has because the alternative perception of our neighbors is one of constant strife. When secular Zionism was to be the solution to endless violence against Jews, Bennett and Shaked and others are celebrating the imminent passage of this law that will legalize the outposts, but they admit that the price will be Amona. It will be destroyed. Bennett crowed, quote, "This is a historic day in the Knesset, which went from establishing a Palestinian state to Israeli sovereignty in Judea and Samaria. Have no doubt the settlement bill is leading the way to annexation." May that be true. So long as any of the powers and remnants of the Oslo Accords are in effect, Israel will continue to suffer. Oslo was an abomination, not for wanting to part with a major piece of Israel in exchange for peace, a defensible proposition, but the abomination of shaking hands with Arafat and Abbas, these monsters of immorality, these mass murderers, these slaughterers of innocents. It was an abomination, no less, for being an embarrassment to the Jewish people, for having leaders such as Rabin and Peres and Balin, these political hacks of no judgment about the Arabs, to think that with these bloodthirsty anti-Semitic butchers it was possible to go into partnership with them and they would be good and honest partners was the height of folly. That English word, which in French means madness. Thinking that it was possible to manage Arafat and company was also the height of arrogance on their part. There was Shimon Peres kissing Arafat on the cheek. That was a symbol of their narishkeit. He thought that being nice to him, he would change him. The government was reported today to still be trying to figure out the best way to deal with the Amona people, but I doubt there is any way to stop on December 25th thousands of settlers from going there and the police and army trying to block them from reaching the spot. It promises to be another spectacle that results from Israel over half a century refusing to proclaim to the heavens Israel's right to live in Judea and Samaria. The Jews' right to build communities on barren hilltops bothering no alleged Palestinians. Israel has to mature and stop playing with the fantasy that in the end the Arabs will agree to take back only some of what we took from Jordan in 1967, and they will be satisfied and become good neighbors. That's peace in the minds of Israelis, who are major players in sustaining the fantasy of there being a Palestinian nation which wants just what Israel says it wants. It wants a home of its own, a Jew-free statelet nestled between the Jordan River and Israel, reconfined to the 1949 ceasefire lines. This is their vision. This is the vision of the visionary left of Shimon Peres and Bugi Herzog. I prefer calling the enemy by his proper name, Muslims and or Arabs. In a way, as Sultan Barak Hussein issued his fatwa that no one is to link terrorism with Islam, so Israelis prefer to see these people as Palestinians, not Muslims, because then there is no solution. This is the thinking of Tzipi Livni and Yossi Beilin. It's their worst nightmare. For it means that Zionism has failed completely in its mission to transform the Jews into a normal people, no longer subject to the abnormal homicidal rages of Goyim. It is no coincidence that Beilin is on record as an atheist, as was his late Oslo cohort Ron Pundak, who, like his father, was a self-proclaimed communist. Peres, a romantic Marxist in his youth, Rabin raised by communists. For all of them, Oslo was the high road to becoming normal, to de-Judaizing Israel, to handing over Judea to the sons of Ishmael, not fighting over it in the name of a God these atheists did not believe in. You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Speaking before of the de-Judaized Oslo architects, Balin and Pundak, and of course Rabin and Peres, all scoffers of the Jewish religion, the Jewish ideology that has sustained this people for thousands of years, a story out of the States is another episode in the disappearance of a tidal wave of Jews into that part of the world. On Shabbos, which I'm sure she never honors, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, struck out at those who accused Congressman Keith Ellison of anti-Semitism. She said it was, quote, maddening. In a Facebook post, she identified herself as a proud American Jew and a progressive Zionist. She said, quote, there's a lot of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia in the world, but don't pretend it exists in Keith Ellison's heart. First of all, notice her self-identification, the first two words. A proud American. Then came the word Jew. And then not a Zionist, but a progressive Zionist. We know what that means, the two-state solution, the beautiful anti-Jew dream of hundreds of thousands of crying Jews driven from their homes. Randy Weingarten does not see in Keith Ellison an anti-Semite. To the same extent, she does not identify with Jews who do. It is very much a statement about herself versus all the other Jews, even Alan Dershowitz, who cannot get around the glaring existence of Ellison's anti-Jew behavior. It's like another outbreak of a spiritual AIDS virus that destroys the defensive immune system, in this case, the inability on her part to identify the enemy. Notice, too, how she says, quote, there is a lot of anti-Semitism and Islamophobia in the world, close quote, which is demonstrably false. Certainly not in the United States, where the statistics are clear. There is no comparison between the numbers of hate crime aggressions against Muslims versus those against Jews. Complete imbalance. It's the Jews who are under attack, not Muslims. There's no equivalence. Jews get it far worse, yet Weingarten implies there is equivalence. She certainly does not want to come across caring more about Jews than Muslims. Moral equivalence is the stock and trade of anti-Jews today, who make no distinction between Arab enemies of civilization and the soldiers in the Israel Defense Force, arguably the most restrained warriors in the world. Notice, too, how she accepts the moral equivalence of, quote, anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, a word made up by Arab Muslims enslaved to their murderous envy of the Jews. They see the Jews having anti-Semitism as a weapon with which to beat other people over the head with guilt. So they have Islamophobia. Jews can't have something that they don't have. Randy Weingarten is a model for millions of Americans who identify as Jews but reject the separation from the larger society that implies and requires. She does not identify as a Zionist, but a progressive Zionist, as opposed to, presumably, those other retrograde Zionists who don't feel guilty over what Zionism did to the indigenous ancient nation in Palestine. Like millions of others, Randy Weingarten, the American, does not want her Jewish identity to diminish in the slightest, her American identity, as a progressive, which means never thinking ill of an African-American, even if, like Ellison, he thinks and talks like a Nazi.
עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, אורו. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, אורו. ראו כי השם הוא הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו, דו כי השם הוא אלוקים. אנחנו עמו וצאן מרעיתו. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים, הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו, עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים. אנחנו עמו וצומריתו. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו ורננה. עבדו את השם בשמחה, בואו לפניו, עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים, הוא עשנו ולא אנחנו, עבדו כי השם הוא אלוקים, אנחנו עמו וצמריתו.
עבדו את השם, בשמחה בואו לפניו אביר ננה עבדו את השם בשמחה
בואו לפניו אביר ננה בואו לפניו
בואו לפניו
בואו לפניו אביר ננה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אביר ננה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אור 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 עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אביר ננה עבדו את השם בשמחה בואו לפניו אור 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 עבדו כי השם הוא אלוהים הוא עשנו בתוך אנחנו אור 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 עבדו כי השם הוא אלוהים
אנחנו עמו רצון מריתו
Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night of this week, and I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yehuda.